Welcome to Podcast on Fire 116. Episode is called Insanity, and we'll explain that when we get to that part of the show, the main review. And my name is Kenneth Wilson, or Kenny B if you like, and with me this week is my good friend Hong Kong Dave.
Hello.
And no other person in the room, because as of this week, we are the ones who don't have a life.
Yeah.
So that's our, you know, stamp of, you know, our verdict, our label for this week. But we're going to make the most of not having a life by doing a podcast mixing fun and information. I guess that speaks to something, our abilities. But regardless, we are located at podcastonfire.com, the anchor show you're listening to, Podcast on Fire, and the home of five other shows at this time, but more to come in the near future. We can be contacted via email, podcastonfire@googlemail.com. We have the message forum, podcastonfire.com/forum. We have on there, if you register, you'll find a members only archive from the past where we place the cut conversations from the show. Shows and exclusive content as well, so there's hours of fun in there. But the main avenue for extra content is nowadays the bonus episodes that we post on the website, and these are website exclusive bonus episodes, meaning they are not on iTunes and they are not on Stitcher. And for instance, the latest bonus episode was the review that me and Tom did on Crazy Safaris, our real conclusion of Vampire Season on the Podcast on Fire Network, was during that bonus episode. So that was all good fun. You weren't able to join us, David, but yeah. I'll actually just ask you later of your brief opinions on the movies we discussed during the conclusion of Vampire Season. I'm just kind of hear your quick bite-sized opinion of those. But anyway, we are on Facebook as well. Our fan page is located at facebook.com/POF Network. But if you search in the Facebook search box and type in Podcast on Fire Network, you'll also reach our discussion group, which is growing quite nicely. And it's more effective as a communication tool to those that are interested than the fan page. I think the groups are sort of noticed more. I've noticed the feedback and the interaction is a bit more frequent than the fan page. So I'm glad I caught on, albeit late, to this trend of discussion groups. And we're also on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire, which is also Stu's personal account, so you'll get an insight into what Grandmaster Stu is doing. Now, Stu will be back soon, we'll promise you that. He's definitely in possession of a life, you know, working full-time and working at a charity-driven cinema that just celebrated its second year, which is great to hear. Such an endeavor, you know, based on the fact that it's a charity-driven cinema in a small town, I'm glad that they are on their second year, and hopefully a third year is coming. So congratulations to Stu and crew. And Stu is by now, you know, 2 years in, gathered skills, mainly, you know, being a projectionist in training, but still he's been doing that on his own, you know, and that's not a bad skill to get while you do something you love, which is clearly why he started participating in the project that was this cinema in his local town. So good on you. My reviews are on SoGoodReviews.com, the written ones, and they are also video reviewed on SleazyKVideo.com. And as usual, I update bi-weekly, and I'm actually updating tomorrow, but my memory is so shot that I can't even remember what the actual review is that is going up tomorrow. But as I'm speaking of it, I'm going to check that out. Oh yeah, because I do mix IFD, Ninja Cut and Paste movies, complete movies from Taiwan, and Hong Kong horror and Taiwan horror, but also category free. And finally, there's a review up for a known movie, a known category free movie again, and it's Jamie Luke's Robotrix. So my written review will go up for Robotrix finally, so that'll be fun. And then we'll also talk of how Robotrix will be featured on the Podcast on Fire network very shortly. But SoGoodReviews.com and SleazyKVideo.com for that mixture. And I'm also on Twitter, twitter.com/SoGoodReviews. The Podcast on Fire network is on iTunes, so rate and subscribe us. We would very much appreciate any feedback on iTunes. And you can also stream us via the application Stitcher, available for your smartphone and available to download to your computer. So just type in Podcast on Fire network and add each show that you like, and I hope you like all of them, of course. And finally, what's up at the Hong Kong Gig Guide, Hong Kong Dave?
Yeah, been lots happening lately. I'm almost closing in on 1500 likes for the page, which
that is a massive number, my friend. That is not to be taken lightly.
Yeah, I mean, I initially started in 2009 when I started the thing on MySpace, and then the year after I moved.
What's MySpace?
Yeah, I know, exactly. The year after I moved on to Facebook, so it's been like kind of 18 months on Facebook, so you know, I'm kind of closing in on 1500.
You must have had an interest in local Hong Kong music even before the likes of MySpace. It was not an idea that was born there just as you found out MySpace existed.
No, I mean, I can trace it pretty much back to sort of 2004. Mm-hmm. So it's been about 8 years now. But been getting loads of shows through for April and even for May, going almost right up to when I arrived there. You know, it was actually a really great show that I happened to miss by 4 days, mm-hmm. which is kind of annoying. But it's nice to know that there's lots of good things happening there. So yeah, lots of news. That's good.
Just a spontaneous question out of the blue: Are there any, albeit local bands, small bands out there that actually feature actors or filmmakers that you might not know of? I mean, for instance, isn't Clement Cheng in a band? The co-director of Gallants?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I'm not aware of that. And I know a couple of guys that are in sort of bands, or you know, maybe do like solo acoustic stuff that sort of, you know, are actors and comedians on a sort of, you know,
look, Johnny Toe, unplugged.
Yeah, you know, on like a sort of a, you know, local kind of theatre level rather than kind of, you know, cinema or TV. But yeah, that's it. There's a few guys from sort of, you know,
and you never know what you're gonna see when you wander the streets in May there. So I mean, there's sort of stuff going on even if you don't know about it. I gather you can, you know, on select evenings, of course, and if the weather's good, you can probably catch stuff you don't know of, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a street next to the famous ladies market in Hong Kong, and it's, you know, it's like pedestrianised. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you often get sort of, you know, film or sort of theatre promotions there, you know, just letting people know what's happening. Mm-hmm. And I think 4 years ago, I was just kind of walking up this road because I was staying nearby at the time, and there would, Jim was in the middle of this middle of this road doing, like, you know, promotion for his latest stage show. So.
And, you know, Jim is one of those very annoying actors. I actually like Jim, but he's a trained stage actor. I'm sure he's fine, and he's not as wacky on stage as he appears in the various Edmund Pang movies. He has quite a large role in You Shoot, I Shoot. I haven't seen the last few Edmund Pang movies, but he has quite a large role in playing an actor in You Shoot, I Shoot. A very devoted actor that they bring in to act as they manage to kill off a gang boss, and they need to have him act as the gang boss, and he's, you know, he starts with that, what's my character, director, and then he then he goes, you know, over the top with it. but I like him. It's good
fun. Yeah, I think it's he's sort of he's got his own style. I think it's and you know, it's probably better suited to, you know, sort of the theatricals kind of stage.
Yeah, it seems so.
But he is supposed to be good, really good in the new Anhui movie, A Simple Life. So.
All right, I can imagine that. So yeah, okay, looks like good fun. So some additional plugs, actually. I was just alerted to this the other day. A journalist and action choreographer Mike Fury, who's interviews with Don Niam and John Miller aided us quite a bit when doing research for the Undefeatable commentary. We obviously credited Mike Fury with being a great source. Mike published an article on his blog called Sex and Serial Killers, A Brief Guide to Category 3 Horror, which was originally meant to be part of a book focusing on global horror cinema, a project that never came to be, actually. But Mike therefore published his part on his blog located at mikefury.net. We'll actually link directly to the blog. And it's a fine read with tips on where to start if you're curious about Category 3 horror movies. Very impressive stuff, so check that out. At lovehqfilm.com, there's been quite a buzz lately. Koso has been gradually publishing the result of the top 100 Hong Kong movies of the 80s, the vote rather than poll. I mean, it wasn't a pre-set poll. You could just send in your top 10 or top 20 movies, for instance, of the 80s, which I did. And so far, as of today, I think the countdown is around about 6 down to 60 right now, I think. Or even 40, down in the 40s. But it's an exciting, eclectic mix from the 80s. Lots of shorts, lots of new wave classics by Patrick Tam, Alec Cheung, you know, Nomad, Love Massacre, Man on the Brink, those kind of movies. And obviously Wong Jing makes it in there, Jackie Chan, Chai Fat, and the closer we get to the top 10 and top 20, we are obviously going to get the likes of A Killer and Better Tomorrow. But it's great to see. And Koso also writes a little bit about the movies and the feature quotes from other reviews and site readers. So it's very fun reading that blog as of so far. So I'll probably end up liking this part of the countdown more because it contains the stuff that you know you go, ah, that's right, why didn't I include that on my 20 list? Yeah. Out of a decade that produced so many goddamn movies. Yeah.
I've done that a few times already.
But did you actually have time to send in a top 10 list?
I did, yeah. 20? I did a top 20, yeah. Not too many of mine popped out so far. Maybe two or three, I think. But
can I ask what you put on the top?
Number one, Prodigal Son.
Ah. I don't know if I actually had that in there. Probably when I was editing out choices and stuff like that. But mine was, must have been, I think, it might have been second or first, but probably first, An Autumn's Tale.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, it's always, Mabel Jones. An Autumn's Tale always works for me, and it's not much to say about it. It's just, perfect all the time. And despite Bullet in the Head being my first, no, I shouldn't even mention Bullet in the Head. That is the 1990 movie. But if it would have been a top 10 list, regardless of decade, I mean, An Autumn's Tale and Bullet in the Head would have had a nice little fight between the number one spot. Probably Bullet in the Head would have made it because it was my first, and it's still a good movie. You know, first movie is always special, but it's still a great movie. Whenever I watch it, I get lost in it, despite knowing each and every beat by now, we're looking forward to those updates. You'll get some links to Koso's blog in the show post link section. And the final additional plug, forcesofgeek.com, and that's quite special. It's a great name for a website, but it's great also because our good friend in Hong Kong, Mike Leader, has been contributing articles because he's their man in Hong Kong, if you will. And it's timely to talk of his preview that was published like a month ago of Roy Chow's Nightfall. And Roy Chow is the director of Murderer, an Aaron Kwok movie. I remember dividing audiences in the middle of it because just of a twist thing. I believe I haven't seen it myself, but one of those low whoa. Okay.
Yeah, it's you the don't, twist is,
I actually don't want you to reveal it because I'm curious about it, but
the twist is quite wild, and it's kind of stylistically as you go through it as well, it's quite startling as well. I'll leave it at that.
Right. Yeah, it did spark my curiosity. So something that, divides viewers, laughing at the movie and being angry at the movie as well. But that intrigues me. And Roy Chow directed Nightfall, starring Nick Chung, Simon Yam, and in a supporting role, Mike Leader himself. as a character originally called Detective Mike Leader. It's, you know, that's Hong Kong cinema old school tradition of naming your characters after the actors. You know, watch several Andy Lau movies. What's his character's name? Andy.
Yeah.
Makes it easier.
Same with a load of the old Jackie Chan movies as well.
Yeah, exactly.
His character's always called Jackie.
Yeah, especially when dubbed later.
Jackie's
movie, Jackie! but it's timely, all of this, because Nightfall was recently released in Hong Kong. We're mid-March right now. So, what Mike has also contributed to the site is an interview with the Sex and Sen 3D director, Christopher Sun. And recently he caught up with hot director Gareth Evans, the Welsh director behind the Indonesian buzz action of The Raid. And it's getting good reviews as well. It seems like it lives up to the promise that the violent trailer showcased of The Raid. So check out those articles, they'll be linked to, and check out forcesofgeek.com. And therefore, it's time for the network updates. So last week, you got treated to the conclusion of Vampire Season with our reviews of The Ultimate Vampire, Encounter of the Spooky Kind 2. And again, I hope you caught the bonus episode on Crazy Safari, as, you know, it's The Gods Must Be Crazy meets Mr. Vampire. I mean, that's an amusing prospect in itself. So I hope you caught that. And I'm sure there's like three or four kind of essential Lam Ching Ying Hoppy vampire movies to cover, but Vampire Season I think is done for now, and I think we'll catch up with some gems along the way. For instance, I want to do Red and Black, which is not a Hoppy vampire movie, but it is a horror movie, but it's set during the Cultural Revolution, and that is mixed in with a blood demon plot, which I think is very obvious symbolism, but it's actually a kick-ass movie, and Lam very much plays this anti-hero, and the it's directed by Andrew Cam, director of Fatal Termination, which by now everybody should know is the movie where the little girl is held out of a speeding car. And he directed The Big Heat as well, Heart of Killers, a very good director. So I think I'll bring up Red and Black eventually. But as I said, I was curious about your brief opinions of the three movies that we covered, David, because you didn't get a chance to actually be on the episode.
No.
So in short, The Ultimate Vampire.
It's probably like the biggest production of a film in this this sort of style, and there's a big cast, loads of scenes of lots of extras, and really quite quite elaborate. But I think the genre is kind of winding down a bit by that point, and one of the things that made the original so good, and a number of other films so good, is the sort of, it was, in a lot of them, there's like a trio of characters. In the original, we got Lam Ching Ying, Chin Su Ho, and Ricky Hui. It's the guy playing the third character in this. Lam Ching Ying's Chin Su Ho. I can't remember the guy's name.
Ronald Wong.
Yeah, he's not. It's just not quite up to their sort of level. I don't think it doesn't quite work as a sort of a trio. But it's quite late in the day in that
it has its moments.
Definitely. But it's it's really quite a lot of quite an elaborate production, which is nice to see.
The outtakes were fun, weren't they?
Oh yeah.
With as we talked about on the show, Carrie diving out of the frame to achieve that vanishing effect, just cut. It's wonderful. I mean, it's supposed to be done simply, but I loved that. She crawling in, on the ground in that white outfit. So that's so endearing. Yeah. So, what about Encounter of the Spooky Kind 2 then?
Yeah, that was really good, because that's got that's the original director, Mr. Vampire, isn't it? Ricky Lau on that. I was talking earlier about, in Ultimate Vampire, about the sort of the trio. In this, the trio is, I think, almost as good, probably is as good as in the original film. Except in this one, it's Lam Ching Ying, Sammo, and Meng Hui. So, they're all really good. They're all kind of, contemporaries, of each other. So, and they sort of really work as a trio. So, I really liked that. Crazy as Fire was like you're saying, mix of the kind of Mr. Vampire in Africa kind of thing. And
had you seen the original movies, the South African movies, at any time?
I'm aware of them. I think I've probably seen bits of or trailers of. I was familiar with the guy.
Nick Zao.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so many sort of crazy bits. Is, Lem Chung Ying was almost like sort of David Attenborough or something. There's all these different sort of, wrestles with a sort of rhino and rides an ostrich and, comes across sort of, several poisonous snakes. But that's lots of fun moments. But
You just have to look at a still from the movie, if you're familiar with the Hobby Vampire genre and a little bit of who Nick Zao is. Those in the same movie? Are you kidding me? That works for me, just having Peter Chan Long as the vampire and Lam Ching Ying in his Taoist robe outfit, and then Nick Zao in his minimal outfit, it's a normal outfit from this movie. It is one of the best from the genre, and it's quite inspiring. They had a concept and they went to town with it and got approval, critical approval. So it's good fun, and the rewatch value out of those three definitely highest for Crazy Safari for me. Further on, earlier in the week, finally, the Director's Series 3 that we recorded like 2 months ago, which is no problem. That is my kind of intent to have many shows in the pipeline. But it debuted finally with our look at Nam Night Choi's The Seventh Curse, one of the movies of his that always gets quoted, but maybe not the name Nam Night Choi. And since there are variations of his name out there, including his English name, Simon Nam, it's no wonder that he isn't as known, because his genre movies, his more famous movies, they are noticeable in quite some other ways, and regular viewers don't think of the director immediately. Oh, I want to know everything about the director, what's he called? And that's a byproduct that I have no problem with, because if you quote The Seventh Curse and Story of Ricky out of this great filmography, great, but if that gets you to sort of examine more, to examine that there are actually better movies than Story of Ricky, I actually think it's one of his lesser movies, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the fun
It's great fun. I'll admit that it's fucking great fun, but when you get to The Cat, that wins, hands down, because it's just super, super fun.
I mean, that's what I'm enjoying about the series so far, and being a part of it, is being able to say, the Seventh Curse, Story of Ricky, the guy that made these films, made these other films as well. And they're as good, if not better. So.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And a competent director, too. I mean, looking at Story of Ricky, that's a kind of a mix. I have mixed feelings about the production quality of that one, but it's still hilarious and fun and just, great at all times. But, I'm critical of it because the level is so consistently high in his filmography. Let's just say, for the sake of a simple argument, that you have 3 5-star movies. The Story of Rick is probably a 4-star movie, so I can look at it more critically. It's a lesser movie, but not a turkey out of his filmography. If anything, his very first movie is The Turkey that we looked at one way only. So, but more Nam Night Choi is coming, obviously. We're doing part 4, which will be a double bill of Ghost Snatchers and Killer's Nocturne. Ghost Snatchers starring Wong Jing, Stanley Fung, a horror comedy. Obviously, with those two in the lead, you expect comedy. Wong Jing in the lead, not producer, just lead. And Killer's Nocturne, set in Shanghai, gambling gangster movie where Chin Siu Ho fights a kangaroo. It makes sense. It just does. And it's a violent ass movie too, so I'm looking forward to revisit that, because the Joy Sales print that was made available on DVD is actually more violent than the old VCD prints. So I'm looking forward to doing a quick comparison of at least the ending, which is crazy violent, even on VCD. So looking forward to that. We rebooted this week in Sleaze, finally, and the V Cinemas and Varied Celluloids, Joshua, Great Lord Joshua Regal, as he might be called on this week in Sleaze. We have a bit of discussion of his name. We settle on that for the time being. Not modest at all. But as he said, you know, you had King Hu before. Now you have a Great Lord Joshua Regal. So the theme of the other host being a Regal statue, it's maintained. Mm-hmm. And this will be online on March 29th, and it's our double bill review of Escape from Brothel and Robotrix. So that's how Robotrix fits into the podcast on Fire Network. And in fact, next episode won't be called the This Week Is This double bill, because I found out I thought of another name in the shower. Make of that what you will. I just thought of it in the shower. And it'll be called those kind of episodes, Tidy Whitey Theater. You know, it makes sense. It absolutely makes sense. And it rolls off the tongue, too. So hopefully that will inspire King Hu to actually come back. You know, I got to be part of the Tidy Whitey Theaters. I have Tidy Whiteys. I have them on all time. So, and that episode will be still semi-serious, despite the name of the show. It will be tackling the Shaw Brothers movie Kidnap and Taylor Wong's Sentence to Hang. Oh. And the reason we're doing those two is that the latter is more important. It's the first Hong Kong movie to receive the Category 3 rating in 1989. And it's actually a remake of the Shaw Brothers drama from the early 70s. Or rather mid-70s, I think it's 74. I didn't know that when I watched Kidnap. It was because Taylor Wong's movie is quite a literal remake at times, you know, almost shot by shot. So I was kind of getting deja vu here. I recognized this from somewhere. And then the whole, you know, capital punishment angle and the free wolves angle. This is
I remember seeing that about, you know, like years back, and that was on the it was the cover that caught me. It's it's like a painting. You got like three walls, and they're kind of, you know, pictures of nooses and things.
I think so. I think that's the original poster.
Yeah,
and it's a real case. It's based on a kidnapping case at the end of the 50s, and this trio that were responsible for this kidnapping case that ended up with the kidnapping victim dying or being murdered. They were the last people to get sentenced to hanging in Hong Kong. And the capital punishment was it was not abolished until like 30 years later, but they were the last people. A trivia note, if I remember correctly, a young Herman Yao actually was the cinematographer on the Taylor Wong movie. And it's a very well shot movie, actually.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
A very atmospheric, with hanging sequence that is in the movie. Spoiler, they do get hanged. But it's very atmospheric, that particular sequence that always stands out to me when I'm thinking about that. Recording that on like, I think next Sunday, not tomorrow, but next Sunday. And running out the network updates, our other plans, like next What's Korean Cinema, obviously we're still forming the Yongari Pulgasari double bill, and the continued Mamoru Oshii coverage on Japan on Fire is going to continue, but no firm dates as of yet. Coffin John, for instance, is coming out of the Korean blogathon hell, which is not hell because it was bad, just because it was quite tiring to post links, because the Korean blogathon is popular. And I want to end this with a commentary suggestion that I was hoping to mention to you both, but I'll mention it to you and see what you think. And you're welcome to shoot down the idea. So the commentary suggestion that we can put into the research work and all that. Who mars the dead and the deadly?
Yeah, I could. Yeah, that's a good. That'd be a good one to do. I mean, I think it would, you know, prompt a lot of discussion. As you know, it's a
Samuel movie that isn't discussed very much, and
it's kind of a
good movie. Wu Ma's a good director, and Lam Shin Ying is hilarious in it. It's the movie where Lam Shin Ying plays like this 150-year-old Taoist priest.
Oh yeah,
it looks like if you like, you know, blew a little bit on it, he would just tip over and die and shatter in a thousand pieces. It looks that fragile, and I absolutely love that. It's pre-Mr. Vampire, too, so it's inspiring.
Early 80s?
82, 83, so
yeah.
And we have a DVD from Megastar that actually has an English dub on it as well, so we can research it that way, too, and make notes on the dub and all that. We've been promising to do that because me and Stu love that movie, but I think the time is good now to talk about Wu Ma's career as a director, and more Sam will talk and all of that. So
yeah,
we're veterans by now, so I think we can do well. But anyway, network updates. We, as always, are slackers, as you can hear. Not productive at all. Anyway, have you been productive on the last movies watched front then, Hong Kong Day?
Yeah, my last film watched was Tomy Unlimited, directed by Noboru Gucci. Mm-hmm. A man of whom it can be said has literally made shit films.
Okay, there we go.
Stylistically, it's somewhere between this, depending on your point of view, famous or infamous style. Somewhere between that and something like, The Grudge. I don't have a particular fondness for either. Mm-hmm. It's no surprise that I didn't really dig this that much. It's not dreadful.
What are we talking in terms of genre here?
It's kind of, it's sort of this story. It's the stories where it's a family horror drama. But it's kind of thing, there's one daughter keeps getting killed and keeps coming back to life. So it's kind of like, it's just similar in that, it's got kind of the long dark hair and all that kind of stuff. Mm. And
but was it made during that like high period of J horror?
No, it's last year.
Okay.
But it's kind of got that similar kind of thing going on, but it's pretty wild as well. Like his films typically are. But it's not terrible. It's just kind of there. There's nothing, nothing really sort of massively distinctive. Or anything to really sort of to grab you.
But you're saying it mixes family drama and horror.
Yeah,
is that an interesting angle at all?
Not really. It's kind of set within within the family. There's two daughters. Mother and father, and it comes and goes depending on if she's been the dead or alive at this point in time. And
who's dead today?
Yeah, it's just. But yeah, it's visually quite flat as well, which doesn't really help it at all. It's it's not terrible. It's just kind of there. It's just it's not nothing that remarkable. It's just
You have to fight today to actually frighten people with that cliched image, of the long black hair.
Yeah, it's kind of. It is almost literally sort of somewhere between that style and his kind of crazy kind of type of film that he sort of typically does.
What movies he typically does? Maybe not what they are, but what is his genre? What is his kind of style?
It's kind of it's one of those ones where they're kind of missing body parts and they got weapons as.
Oh.
Different parts of their, arms and legs, and I think like was it a Robo Girl or something?
We have Robo Geisha and
that's the one. That's it. Yeah. That's his kind of kind of crazy kind of thing like that. So it's kind of got some of that in there, and some of sort of the sort of the Grudge style and the sort of creepy thing and. Mm-hmm.
Robo Geisha was fun. I reviewed it for the site. Well, it was fun enough. But I mean, as Stu said, and I realized it after watching it, that the Geisha turns into a character out of Mario Kart at the end, which is actually great. It's a big kaiju ending, and she actually could be a hidden character in Mario Kart, if you will, the Robo Geisha. That would be fun. I mean, it had energy. It was not. I think I saw a version that was lacking the gore, but then again, the gore that it was lacking was the CGI gore. So no loss there really. But it was fun enough.
Yeah, there's an interview with the director on the disc as well. It was probably more fun for me than the film. He discusses his background in AV films and
porn director.
Yeah, yeah.
Sweet.
That's my joke about shit films, because he was talking about his he suggested to his producers at the time he was wanting to do like a enema films and he's made loads of these things, dozens, and he talks about it in the interview, and he used to, it was his idea and he loved doing it and
sounds like a character.
So, he discusses his love of arses and he talks about future productions, including the zombie arse Toilet of the Dead.
What the hell?
Where the plan seems to be to have them attack arse first.
It does take some skill though to actually make that. You can have concepts in your head, mm-hmm. but you should execute as well. But then this movie sounds like the total anti stance against all of that. It sounds like he's trying to make a serious movie all of a sudden.
Yeah, he's quite. He does bring that up when he's talking about the film itself. He says it's for him, it's a pretty sort of straight film, mm-hmm. which is a fair enough comment. But before we started the recording, I actually did find the trailer for Zombie Arse on YouTube, because it's actually just out in the cinemas, maybe even now in Japan. So it's quite a fun trailer, pretty crazy.
Yeah, we'll make sure to link to that then. It's bound to have had a hit or two on YouTube, that type of title. Yeah. Wow. Interesting. was this at all, are we talking a UK release that you watched?
I'm not entirely familiar with the label that's done it, but I think that's kind of their what they kind of go for. They go for it's kind of cult audience and Asian cult films.
I'll make sure to link to that as well for anyone who's interested in renting or buying the movie. Okay, any more movies? Any anime movies to mention?
No. Okay, not this week.
Okay. Alrighty. A triple bill, if you will, of some movies I watched recently. All kind of old school or rather martial arts movie or wuxias to an extent. Not that I planned it; it just happened that way. I pick randomly from my pile here and my portable hard drives and all of that. So watch the 12 Deadly Coins from 1969, which is a Shaw Brothers swordplay martial arts drama by the director of Temple of the Red Lotus, rather a trilogy of Temple of the Red Lotus, whose other movies I can't think of now. I think one is Sword of the Loot. One is something else, but it's a trilogy of Jimmy Wang Yu, the groundbreaking Temple of the Red Lotus, one of the very, very early type of wuxias from Shaw Brothers. Director is called Xu Tsang Hong, and there's clarity and elegance and efficiency to 12 Deadly Coins. It's I won't talk much plot really, but it's I can mention though its setup is a little bit flimsy and not emotionally engaging as the director wants, but the fact that it aims for being emotionally engaging despite this being set in this fantasy world, bringing in humanity in the fantasy world of the martial world, it's always admirable. I sit up when that is made well, and it has notions of betrayal and revenge and all of that, the usual stuff, but it works very well. And Lo Li stars in it, and the great Chen Feng, a veteran actor Chen Feng, Bruce Lee's master in Fist of Fury, who I think is slowly but surely becoming one of my favorite actors when being in Shaw Brothers movies, because Chen Feng has a great face, but he worked so much better in Shaw Brothers movies, I think, especially playing villains. Which he doesn't hear, which was welcome. He's the villain in King Boxer, a really vile villain in King Boxer. So I really like Chen Feng. The finale is actually very good. It goes for atmosphere quite well, because it sets the final drama in the ring. It has violence and all that, but it doesn't end with an end fight, rather end drama. and make some decent points about the dark cycle of violence need to be broken. So it's a very good movie that the Celestial did release eventually. I mean, it might be out of print now, but it's not one of the Sea Eagle exclusives or anything. So 12 Deadly Cores, highly recommended. And then you pick something random out of the pile as well, you know, Monkey Fist. And 1974 Basher with unknowns, you know. And it's painful for 1 hour. Really low budget stuff about local conflicts local conflicts with the influential evil, you know, the great influential, you know, boss of the town who's played by Seth Kinn, which is great. And by the hour mark, you know, the bashing is actually quite compelling and intense, including from the great Seth Kinn. He has some pretty good fight scenes. So I dug it overall. I had a great poster as well. One of those posters that are more like newspaper clippings. You know, one of those old school posters that is mighty busy, has text all over the place, but some key images on top of it. And I like those posters quite a bit. And finally, I watched this 1985 movie called Disciples of the Shaolin Temple, which is, it might be a Hong Kong production, but it's a mainland set martial arts movie. And problem is, it's largely a light romp, making this akin to, you know, not Police Academy, but Shaolin Temple Academy. that means in this case pretty awful. I like the Police Academy movies, but the problem is that there's no distinction in the group. You know, you don't get attached to any characters, and nor the conflict involving a fighter challenging Shaolin and its honor. But so despite the incredible setting and the action, within all of this and within the comedy, it doesn't really work. But when weapons are involved and a gritty intensity is involved during the end, you know, you have, like, the end reel is really, really good and gritty, but you don't know really. You have no emotional investment even on a basic level. So Disciples of Shaolin Temple is far from another Shaolin Temple touchdown from the mainland, Jet Li's Shaolin Temple. Definitely far from it, but, you know, it's good enough, but a trick, a bit of a trick.
Mia! Kavia! 不吃豬腸粉? 要吃魚子醬? 那鬼佬叫你吃什麼吃什麼的? You shut up!
And welcome back after Simon Yam told me to shut up. We're not going to shut up anymore, Simon, so deal with it. You actually heard last week that we were going to talk a Shaolin, but since Tom KW got couldn't make it on this show, and we decided to push Shaolin to at least next week, Benny Chan's Shaolin. So, but the backup movie, so to say, was my pick, and it's Insanity from 1993. And the plot goes a little bit something like this from my review of the film. And it's sort of plot and notes, really, on the film. But regardless, Simon Yam appears briefly at the beginning as a cop, which then leads us into the haunted, scary statue movie of the movie. You know, a movie within the movie, which will be a point during my review anyway. And that statue should ward off spirits, but instead spooks newlyweds Cathy Chow and Raymond Wong. Raymond, happy ghost, Wong. But you must remember, though, Simon Yam was in this movie at one point. So at the halfway point, the director, Tony Leung, gives us the 40-minute Trapped Alone with a Deranged Killer movie. There's two movies in this, essentially. That is the better movie. A little bit of background. Simon Yam was in every movie in the beginning half of the 90s, including this one. And he's obviously remembered for great acting, but when he got to act nuts and then some, that was quite highly memorable. To me, anyway, you know, no one did it as great as Simon Yam, not even Anthony Wong. Simon turning it up to 111, that's quite a sight. And all of this is orchestrated by producer, writer, and co-star Raymond Wong, but you know, mainly director Tony Leung Siu-Hung deserves the credit here, in my opinion. And he's the brother of Bruce Leung, who was in Kung Fu Hustle, but also was one of the Bruce Lee clones from movies like The Dragon Lives Again, which was one of the better Bruce Lee clones movies because it's set in the afterlife where Bruce fights, you know, the Man with No Name and Emmanuel and Satoichi and it's free.
I've got to see that.
That's a fantastic movie. And it's dedicated to all the fans of Bruce Lee, and then it basically says, fuck you, by just... It's wonderful. It's actually, it's creative. And Eric Tsang plays Popeye. Yep. And it seems like a natural fit, really. I think it's not muscular as such, you know, where Popeye was muscular. But it kind of works when Eric Tsang is in the sailor outfit and with the pipe and all of that. And they must have stolen the famous musical cues from Popeye. So... dying to rewatch that. Actually, I haven't watched it in a number of years, but that's good fun. The Dragon Lives Again, probably in the public domain, so you could you should have no bad conscience if you download it. It's only available in full screen mostly out there, so not any remastered Blu-ray coming anytime soon. But anyway, that's Bruce Leung, brother of our director tonight, Tony Leung Siu-Hung. Tony is an extremely talented action director. He's worked on Magic Crystal, Cool Kill, Angel, the first one, as well as No Retreat, No Surrender 3. But he's also a talented director, working the most effectively when going against expectations of what an action director, what you think an action director can bring to the table. You know, Insanity has action and fights, but isn't an action movie. His movie Vendetta dipped its toes into horror, had action scenes, but mainly was a horror movie, and he's directed English language productions for Seasonal Film Corporation. Seasonal was, of course, the company that got Jackie Chan his big breakthrough, and movies such as Superfights was the action directed and directed by Tony Leung. They aren't genre benders as such, but he showed he could work, work in an English language movie and... get his action to come across. There's some great, great action in Superfights. Oddly enough, for a low-budget movie, Insanity was released in Dolby Stereo, which was a rarity in Hong Kong at the time. But sadly, we have no release replicating that expanded soundscape. Not even the Ocean Shores Laserdisc actually has this, which is a shame. Because mono versus stereo. I mean, it's a quite clear... choice, and I think they did. This could have had some cool channel separation because of the movie it is.
Yeah.
But that's what we're stuck with, and that's not a bad trade-off. We have the movie at least. So that's the background. So I want to hear your quick bite-sized main take on the film, Dave.
Well, it's an unusual word to use about a film like this, but it was fun. The start of the film is, literally and figuratively Simon Yam. It just sort of, it's his film.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as well known as, movies like, maybe Run and Kill or Dr. Lamb, but I think is as good here as he is in either of those two. So.
Oh, shit, yes.
Yeah, and it's probably kind of a shame that it's not more widely available and more well known.
And my theme of the review is actually, it's good to be the producer and writer.
Yeah.
You know, but thank God Raymond Wong headed this production, though, you know, because that's where it counts during a very short running time. You know, it's 81 minutes. Where it counts, it's pretty chilling stuff.
Not even that.
It's quite a haunting, chilling movie. And fun to an extent, too, you know. It has... eye candy, Cathy Chow is designed to be eye candy. It's exploitation, therefore. It's weird. It's probably way too complicated plot-wise. But it's a showcase for Tony Leung, where eventually, where he works very few threads in a small space. And Simon Yam going super nuts is the best thing about 90s Hong Kong cinema ever. I mean, for instance, you got to mention that the movie seems partially a horror movie.
Yeah, it's kind of a... It's kind of odd like that. You're saying about it being like two different kind of films. It kind of is. Producer and writer Raymond Wong doesn't usually miss a trick. I'm surprised you didn't consider calling it Unhappy Ghost or something. That would have been
yeah, it's. I mean, in general, how do you think those halves of the movie works? Because you know, again, it's 40-45 minutes of this haunted statue movie, and with Cathy Chow being spooked and Raymond Wong being spooked, and there's, you know, it doesn't seem in my mind, it doesn't fit with the second half of the movie. Although I really, really dig this movie. Well, what was your take on the different halves?
Yeah, I think you're right. They don't necessarily you know, gel together, but there's you know, Lung Siu-hung spends like so little time, just, you know, he doesn't linger on any sort of aspect of the film, yeah, or any aspect of the story, sorry. So, you know, the fact that they are quite, you know, the two parts of the film sort of would, you know, they maybe would jar in another director's sort of hands, but he just, you know, he keeps the pace going, he keeps, you know, really snappy with, you know, pretty minimal kind of, you know, exposition and explanation. It just, you know, it rolls along and keeps going. You know, it doesn't linger on any sort of any aspects, you know, of the film particularly. It just keeps the, you know, the momentum going, the story going. And
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, while I am kind of frustrated with the film, it definitely doesn't bore, because I have seen this before, but still, it's still like this every time I do watch it. That, you know, where are you going with this? Are you going somewhere? I know where you're going to end up, but, you know, are you... You know, talking more specifics, you know, what happens there, you know, they get this statue that is supposed to ward off spirits and protect them from evil, and it seems to appear everywhere, and it appears to, you know, being out to hurt them. You know, there's even a cool little comedy sequence with the statue, falling on Raymond Wong's head during the sex scene, which is effectively not... which is thankfully aborted, you know. And then there's a cut to ketchup and a sausage being rolled around
breakfast,
ketchup,
yeah.
And then you see Raymond Wong being very grumpy with a Band-Aid on his on his head, you know, without going, on us. It's a nice little cutaway, and so you wonder, like, what is this statue, you know, actually doing? Is it affecting the environment? Is it trying to kill rather than protect? And then there's hallucinations when Cathy Chow goes to her gynecologist, I guess, and at one point the statue comes rolling along, you know, clearly having a life of its own. And, you know, there's so many strange signs here of a horror movie, of course, but, you know, in terms of a payoff, not too sure about the, like, mad distinct inclusion of the statue. Maybe it takes a certain Hong Kong mindset to understand the issues of superstition and signs, bad signs from fortune tellers and bad signs in general, that those signs are not to be taken lightly. I mean, maybe it takes a Hong Kong superstition mindset to understand this a little bit more, but I don't know. I thought it was strange, but thankfully it was not offensive to me, you know, as a, you know, critic or anything, you know, because of the latter half of the movie.
Yeah, the bit where her mum turns up and, you know, he's looking out the back of the house with the binoculars, mm-hmm. and she sees the sort of gravestones on the hillside, and very superstitious, and, you know, that would be considered kind of like a, you know, bad luck and. Yeah, and that kind of thing. But I was talking earlier about this sort of like a almost kind of minimal kind of explanation and, you know, exposition. And there was it's quite startling at times, but, you know, that approach is actually one of the film's strengths. That it never just seems to stop going. You know, it just keeps going. As one of the examples is almost in that same. I think possibly almost in that same scene where, you know, Cathy Chow's character, she starts coughing when her mum's there, you know, it's just kind of, you know, kind of coughing a bit. And then the next scene, she's getting an internal examination from a doctor. Mm-hmm. you know, it's like sort of, okay, you know, I can't quite see the link necessarily, but
and, it was, and, you know. And the scenario before that is, you know, her in the pool, and there's a sort of a towel that comes flying and almost drowns her, you know, in the pool. And you wonder, there is something going on here, but I'm not offended that I didn't get an explanation, but it deserves, you know, a little, you know, point of the finger, you know. You were doing something, but you were not doing it well.
It's kind of odd, but it just keeps, you know, it just keeps coming at you. So you just kind of, you kind of take it and kind of go with it a bit.
It is kind of fun, though. I mean, I'm admitting that. So I mean, if it would have been boring, that would have been another thing, you know. Mentioning that Tony is an action director, you know, there is some stuff in here, logical stuff, you know, some gritty action, you know. Some gunplay, some nasty headbutts, you know, some struggles, you know, and that I like that I'm not too sure he choreographed action, but I wouldn't be surprised because it's not a hell of a lot in it, and it, you know, if so, it's well injected into the movie, not a here we go, here's the action scene. It's so Tony Ravey is on board to provide harsher, more struggly type of gritty action, if you will, which I like. It's well inserted into the film. What isn't well inserted into the film, again, you can't avoid talking Raymond Wong and Cathy Chow. They're married, and good on him, you know, the character. If he got this girl, you know, because he's a nerdy character, he's a businessman and he probably has money, so, you know, but good on him if that was a relationship where, you know, they found each other. That's beautiful. But I still smell a producer using the fact that he produced and wrote this to his advantage.
Yeah.
not in a criminal way, obviously. But
no, I mean, you know, Raymond Wong, Cathy Chow sort of domestic sort of sequences, they kind of play like they're from one of the kind of comedies that he at least is, you know, much better known for, you know. But they are like those kind of New Year movies, and it's almost, you know, because it kind of got to relate at least somewhat to the rest of the film. But sort of, you know, there's that same kind of style, some kind of feel as there is in those films, because I'm, you know, quite familiar with those. So I kind of recognise that straight away. It's like, it's, you know, just like a New Year movie, kind of. Yeah. A little kind of domestic sequence. And,
but very, you know, subtle. It's not like he breaks out into a full-on Happy Ghost reference or anything that. It is a different beast for him. And a movie that is even kind of in tone. It doesn't have any IR moments, as I said.
It does feel... being very familiar with a good deal of his films, it seems really odd to me to see him in a film like this, you know, essentially like a sort of a thriller. Just, you know, to see him pop up, it's like, you know, he should be cracking like silly jokes and, you know and you know, falling down stairs or something, you know. It's kind of, you know, just this sort of, you know, sort of comedic stuff, and it's quite it's quite a jar to see him in a film that's so unlike
But what he's clever in doing is that he exits the movie and lets the better part of the movie dominate. And say, we'll get to that. I want to talk a little about what Tony is having fun with setting up stuff here. You know, the taser, the for instance, the sharp clothesline. We won't spoil how that plays into the movie, but the sharp clothesline that could, shatter apples, and those are obvious setups, but not intrusive ones, not every time anyway, because at some points I think Tony goes overboard with his transitions from one moment to another scene. We talked of the scene where Raymond Wong has the statue falling onto him, and the cutaway is to what turns out to be ketchup, but you think it is, you know, thick blood running. That's good. I don't mind that. But then you have, you know, cutaways from the statue to the club scene where with John, the businessman, is with his clients, you know, and you see these dancers with similar type of masks, and it seems like John is affected too by the statue because he storms the stage thinking his wife is there, and it's obviously, you know, some subconscious fear there, and eventually when I won't spoil it, but eventually when a character gets killed, that transitions into a character screaming in the bar, but it turns out she's singing. Tony, we we got the point. You like your transition, so okay, get on with it. So, but it's not the most lazy type of transitional work I've seen, though. I mean, I've seen more pedestrian directing than this in my time.
Yeah, it's not particularly subtle, those bits, but they are fun. Yeah, fun watch.
And where's Simon Yam? In all this, wasn't this a Simon Yam movie? And eventually,
I was thinking that when I was watching it. As well. I thought,
okay, so cameo
he was in somewhere,
beginning somewhere, and but it eventually for all this setup, and turns out to be a Simon Yam Cafe Chow movie. After it's been very spotty and very unfocused, you know, that finally it you see Simon Yam as this cop character arrive at Cafe Chow's front door as this calm, collected, safe presence, you know, a protective presence, because there seems to be a murderer out there somewhere, and it seems all fine, and then Simon Yam asks to call his wife, who paged him, and he's talking nicely to her, and what are we gonna have for breakfast tomorrow? Oh yeah, that'll be nice. Caviar.
You bitch.
And that's the snap we're talking about, talking to his possibly imaginary wife. And as fun as that sounds, as he snaps at the notion of caviar, I fucking love when it's Simon doing that, because Simon is, you know, this is playtime surely for Simon.
Yeah,
you can see it in Dr. Lamb. Will be Dr. Lamb's a serious movie. He's allowed to go to town, in particular working with Billy Tang. Run and Kill and Street Angels are examples as well, where, you know, Simon Yam, do you have 11? Yeah, I do. Do you have 111? Oh, yes, I do. Turn it up to 111 then. Yes, sir. And working with Tony, it seems like that is available, you know, that mode is available as well. And surely this must be fun, you know, because if this was, you know, tiring to Simon, I don't think we would have seen this energy. You know what I mean?
No, I think it's definitely it definitely comes naturally to him. I think if he's asked to do it, he'll go for it 100%, and if that's what's wanted, the director wants from him, he'll go all the way with it.
Yeah, the pulse and the aggression could be increased in a millisecond, which I absolutely thoroughly enjoy it, and it is kind of scary, though. Of course, it's a fun performance, but it is kind of chilling and scary too, because you do gasp a little when Simon Yam is, muttering to himself that fucking wife, and he's peeling the apple with the knife while he's increasing his pulse and aggression, talking of his wife, and that's kind of tense stuff. He does cut himself while doing that too, but Tony chooses have him observe Kathy's legs and her lips, and that's just as tense. You know, it's exploitation in a way, shameless stuff, and it's not shot POV style, point of view style, but it kind of represents Simon Yam's eyes and mind, where his focus lies, the legs and the lips, and at this point, Simon is back, and the horror movie before this, how does that matter? I don't think it does, but I don't care anymore, because now we have a chase scenario that is really, really cool. So how do you think Tony works this house terror movie that he made within the movie?
It is an odd being the contrast is pretty big, but
a two-person thriller, by the way, is a challenge to make. So how do you think lives up to that challenge?
That part of the film, he really sort of that seems to be his kind of strength. I mean, he's obviously best known as an action director, and I think he really brings that experience to bear here, because he's sort of he really knows how to put it all together, and it's really it is the best part of the film. It's
do you think it's chilling and haunting as such, or do you think it's more fun, even though fun is not a bad grade to give?
It is fun, but it's tense. It's like a tense situation, because you know you're expecting things to happen. You kind of know things are going to happen, but it doesn't happen straight away. Mm-hmm. It's not like he goes straight into the house and he starts going crazy. It kind of
caviar.
yeah. He kind of builds it up. You know, he sort of he kind of loses it when he's peeling in the apple, and he loses it when he's pretending to be on the phone, and
he loses it when the cuckoo clocks distract him. And those cuckoo clocks, they are not getting away easy. Just slices those fucking shells, those boxes that they're in.
he kind of does those bits, and you think, what's happening next? What's coming next? So it's sort of tense.
But I liked it, because working with Simon, you will get, if you like, an uncontrollable force in terms of a character, which is great, as you alluded to, unpredictable stuff. And it might turn out to be really heinous stuff that we get in this movie. And we do. I mean, there are innocent characters that get in the way of Simon. I want to mention some standout moments here, if we go back a little bit to the action, because I'm very pleased with the film. These last 40 minutes are almost dialogue-less terror in the Hong Kong cinema blue, and I'm talking the color scheme blue,
which I love.
But so that's my kind of final tally. But I wanted to mention some physical action here. There is a fight between Simon Yam and another cop in the movie, which is a really nice and gritty fight as well, where it's action direction that is designed where you surely need to take some bumps when you slam each other around like that. You know what I mean? It's Hong Kong too. It's not like they pad them up all pussy style a la Hollywood, and there's no insurance companies watching over them. You can't hurt the actors. I don't care. Just slam me into a table or into a wall.
It's getting pretty physical.
Yeah, and I think I've seen that those aspects in Tony's action directing, that it's a kind of hard action. Even in Magic Crystal, there's that hard aspect that also Sammo did so well. There's power in there. And if anything, a reference work for Tony is watch Magic Crystal, which is a brilliant Wong Jing movie. I absolutely adore the movie. It's fun as hell. Even Nat Chan isn't annoying. I know. And Wong Jing, who co-stars in the film, isn't annoying, and it's a rip-off of E.T. Encounters of the Close Encounters of the Third Kind, rather. But it has fantastic action as well. So go watch Magic Crystal in terms of Tony's watching reference work from Tony. But some other reference moments here. I don't know if you caught this or not, but Kathy actually takes some bumps in this movie and does some of her own stunts. And one in particular, she rolls down the stairs at one point. You know, she does one 360 tumble and then slams into the wall, and she looks dazed, man. They cut away quickly, but she looks like she is out of it, really, that she looked dazed from taking that stunt. And I looked back at it to see, wait a minute, was there a cut in there? No. Kathy rolls down the stairs, and it's a very short roll, but still in a confined space. And she has to roll, hit the wall with her back, and she does. Ooh. And I think there's she is hit by Simon, and who is in the background of the shot. She's hit, and she's supposed to kind of slam into the stair railing, which is if it didn't hurt, then it sold very well. So Kathy is getting a gamer, seemingly. I mean, hopefully she was not made to do all of this, but regardless, I mean, suffering for our pleasure, kind of. I enjoy that. sadistic as that may sound, I actually enjoy that just as much as I enjoy Jackie Chan suffering for our pleasure. It hurts, but man, it's great celluloid, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, They really, the style of it is to, you know, make, you're saying it's, you know, like you're saying it's hard, and, you know, it looks like it hurt, and if it didn't, you know, they have done, you know, a fantastic job with it, because it really does look like it hurts.
Without spoiling anything, one of the final acts of violence in the movie, you know, involving the clothesline, did you at all spot that earlier in the film? Like, I bet they're gonna come back to that.
Sometimes
stuff are so evident that you still kind of miss them, you know.
I thought they signposted that one.
Yeah, but it's a great callback at the end of the movie. Yeah,
yeah, it doesn't detract from it at all.
They kind of, where before it happens, that you are kind of prepared for it, because it doesn't happen instantly. You know that you, whoa, oh yeah, it's built up with some slow motion and stuff like that. So I dig it. It has major flaws, but I dig it. And who can complain about an 81-minute movie? It's all good. How do you want to end your review, or do you have any additional notes you want to share with us?
I've got a couple of bits. As you know, Raymond Wong is the producer. I guess it's not that surprising, but he actually recycles a gag from Happy Ghost 5, which was
fucking
made...
Hell, have you seen Happy Ghost 5? I haven't even, because it's quite unavailable.
It's got the Legendary Collection.
Oh, it came out finally.
Yeah,
okay.
I've got. I probably should confess now. I have all five Happy Ghost films.
Well, they're all good fun. I think I like 3 and 4 very good. I do like 3 and 4 Happy Ghost movies. But what's the gag?
Yeah, it's from Happy Ghost 5, which was made 2 years before this one in 1991. It's the scene where he's trying to get it on with Cappy Chow, and the dog is, you know, starts barking at him. That scene, it's a straight lift. There's a scene exactly like it in Happy Ghost 5. But obviously that's a comedy. But as soon as they did it, I thought, oh, it's a straight. They've nicked it. It's a, you know, they've nicked the entire joke. It's quite funny.
From himself, nonetheless.
Yeah. that was an interesting little bit that I picked up on. There's some terrific subtitles, as they usually is as well. I found a couple of favourites. It's during this sort of, you know, the domestic sequence, they've kind of just moved into the house, and you know, he's sitting down reading the newspaper, and I think she's maybe sort of tied up, or she's, you know, kind of by the dining room table, and you know, he's reading bits out of the newspaper, and she goes, "Such kind of matter will scare us to mad." That was just quite a fun one.
Are you going to mention the fact that they repeat the term "terribly murdered" quite a bit in the film?
Yeah. That's the odd thing as well with that news.
She was not murdered terribly. She was terribly murdered.
And that's the odd thing about that, because they show you that news...
which
news
is not a spoiler, by the way. We're not going to mention who was terribly murdered, but it's repeated quite a bit.
Yeah. It's about 3 or 4 times. This is like, you know, before the days of sort of, you know, like rolling news and, you know, 24-hour news channels. So it's quite odd to see that you know, piece quite so often. But
yeah.
And there's another really good one where Cappy Chow's in the temple, and she's kind of waiting in line, and you know, there's the old lady talking to the guy, the kind of fortune teller, I guess, you know, the guy in the temple. His line to this old lady is, "Okay, just remember not to piss to the gnome again."
Yes.
She's like, obviously, yeah, it's like mistranslation, but it's just an odd line.
Yeah, and it happens twice as well. I think they mentioned it twice. Yeah. So it's not like they rebounded with a sort of correct one. But
he really kind of emphasizes it. You know, you shouldn't piss to the gnome. Don't piss to the
gnome. Yeah, you can have fun in that regard. Fun in that regard as well. I actually, when watching a completely different movie the other day, something occurred to me that they rarely get right the fact that, you know, if someone is getting onto a motorbike, the subtitles often say car instead. The thought occurred to me, and I asked our friend Sylvia if she knew, because she studies Cantonese quite a bit, if there's if the word for, you know, bike, motorbike, and car are so similar that they, you know, they often do that mistake. And yeah, it is. It essentially is the same word, a gathered word for vehicles. You know, they have individual ones, of course, but it oftentimes they do use the word. I think it was a word like che for, you know, car, bike, or motorbike. And so no wonder that happens. You know, get on the car, and then it's a, you know, a Vespa or something. You know, so it's, you know, it's a pretty honest error from that era. Where they translated so many movies and didn't sit down with retranslators or anything, but it, you know, it might speak volumes of me as a writer and a critic that I think that stuff is fun.
Yeah,
you know, it never detracts from the experience, especially when it's within a movie that is supposed to be fun. You know, one of my favorite subtitles ever is from Devil Fetus, that fantastic early 80s horror movie, and there's a party scene where I think there's some westerns involved, and they say essentially that they're going to go inside to the party again. They're on a balcony, and then the subtitle says, you know, come on, let's make happy. and you know, that's just summarizes it all. Like, that makes me happy, you know, that they made happy. And it sounds like sexual innuendo, which it isn't. You know, it doesn't lead to a sex scene as far as I remember. Which would have been fun and clever all of a sudden, but there you go. You can, of course, catch a million of these funny subtitles on Facebook. We're going to mention Brian Kirby, our good friend Brian Kirby, of Shelf Life Clothing, created this page called Hong Kong Subtitles, and that took off like mad, and there's always fun stuff on there. I think I posted one from that Kenny B movie, Monkey Business, that someone has jumped off the sea. Or someone had jumped off to the sea, which was inspiring. So, yeah, good fun. Okay, are we done with Insanity, you think?
Yeah, I think so.
And again, not a readily available movie. Ocean Shore Laserdisc, VCD and tape, probably a wide-sight DVD, which recycled the Ocean Shore's print. But I don't think there's... if the wide-sight DVD is out there, then it should be a cheap one. We do recommend it.
yeah.
Not easy to find either in the online torrent community, I think, because I think it's still quite an unknown movie that is not on many people's radar.
Yeah, it's the same really, because you know, it's got quite a lot going for it.
Yeah. Well, Simon Yam made 5,000 movies in 15 minutes at one point in his career, so you know, no wonder a movie or two got buried,
yeah,
including this one. Yeah. So. Okay, that's us. And next week, you know, it's a we'll have to say it's kind of preliminary, but we aim to do Shaolin next week, Benny Chan's Shaolin. So we'll see if he gets some redemption from me or not after New Police Story. So there you go. But anyway, we are done. And there's some contact information before we sign off. You've been listening to Podcast on Fire at the Podcast on Fire Network, the main show, the anchor show. And we can be reached via email, podcastonfire@googlemail.com. Our message forum is podcastonfire.com/forum. Check out the members only archive. Check out the bonus episodes on the website, including the latest one on Crazy Safari. And check out our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/POF network. And search in the Facebook search box for Podcast on Fire Network to get to our discussion group. And we're also on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire. I do my writing on SoGoodReviews.com, my video reviewing at SleazyKVideo.com. I've already forgotten what review it was. Oh yeah, Robotrix is tomorrow. There we go. I have so many in the pipeline, it's hard to keep track of the reviews sometimes. So look out for Robotrix tomorrow, which is Sunday, on those two very sites. And I'll be talking about that on Twitter.com/SoGoodReviews. We are also on iTunes, the Podcast on Fire Network, so rate and subscribe to us, and listen to us as well if you like on Stitcher, stitcher.com. Download that to your computer or add it to your smartphone. Just go to your app store, that's a free application, and you can stream the Podcast on Fire Network. Each and every show can be added individually. So, and in short, what is there to say about Hong Kong Gig Guide at this time?
Yeah, it's got quite a lot going on, so if people want to drop by and take a look, that would be great.
And there's a link to the Facebook page on our in our show post. But obviously, you can just type in Hong Kong Gig Guide on Facebook, and you'll be maybe the 1500th fan to the page, and you will win absolutely nothing. Or will you?
I did do a giveaway for the 1000th. So
right.
I might do something similar for the sort of 2000, maybe.
What did you give away?
CD. I did a CD.
Right on. Two CDs, maybe, at the 1500. Anyway, this has been Podcast on Fire 116. So thank you, everybody, for listening, and then see you next week. And I've been your host, Kenny B, and with me was Hong Kong Dave.
Bye.